name's Bond. James Bond.
You are listening to Cinema D'Amore. I am Justin Morgan. I'm here with
Chuck Phillips.
And this month's theme is Bond. Specifically, Daniel Craig era. Let's begin with Casino Royale. Oh my god, so we are finally here, Chuck, talking about Daniel Craig's Bond.
Yeah.
It's a Bond. I mean, finally talking about Daniel Craig's Bond.
As of this moment, we still don't know that we're going to finish this off with the newest film, No Time to Die. We don't know.
I think we do the episode regardless.
I mean, yeah, we're already here. We're not going to not release these episodes. We're not going to hold them till you know, if they were to move it at this point. At this point, we just go forward with it, and then, yeah, we'll still do a No Time to Die episode, and it's just us talking about, like, the trailer.
We'll do
like,
two of
them. That's all we've seen.
We'll do a speculation episode where maybe we just make shit up.
Yeah.
And then we'll do a real episode. So we'll have a No Time to Die speculation and No Time to Die the real episode.
Yeah.
That sounds nice. But yeah, I guess we gotta go back to, what was it, like 2005 when we found out who the new James Bond was going to be after Pierce Brosnan?
Yeah, that sounds about right, because it was, because what is this, 2007? It was probably like 2 years.
This is 2006.
2006? Oh, okay.
I think they teased him, and I remember everybody bitching that he was a blonde, which is such a weird thing.
Almost essentially, you could say Sean Connery is the only true James Bond based off of the book. Like, it's, they also, Ian Fleming, the writer of the original novels, included in that he was, that he had Scottish ancestry because, like, he loved Sean Connery. Like, he thought Sean Connery did a good job. So, like, I mean, if you're getting technical, basically every Bond after Sean Connery has always been, like, a fake Bond for whatever reason, because you get the Roger Moore's British, George Lazenby's Australian, Pierce Brosnan, I think, is Irish, and I think Timothy Dalton's Welsh, or maybe I have those backwards. Pierce Brosnan might be Welsh, and Timothy Dalton might be Irish, but I know that that's what people have brought up. Like, technically, none of them are, like, real James Bond, because James Bond's supposed to be Scottish.
I think at this point, James Bond can be anybody. I really mean that too. There's so many people.
No, he can't be. He can't be anybody. I still firmly believe it'll be a hard pass if there's an American James Bond. I will not stand. He could be from any other country in the world, but as soon as they're like American James Bond, I'm like, nope, I'm out.
They might hold off on that for a while.
I don't think. Yeah, I don't know that they'll ever get to that. There's plenty of. It's not like there's no British actors or like British, Scottish, Australian.
They finally broke the British directors only pact that they had with the new one.
Yeah, technically they finally did that.
It's obviously the largest cinematic franchise in the UK. That's a given.
I'd say this is pretty close to, I mean, how many other franchises, like Godzilla is almost the only other franchise I can really think of being like that scale of running for that length. Because the first one was, I think Dr. No was 1960? 1962. So that's only 6 years after, or 8 years after Godzilla. So, like, they've almost been running, and they're both up into, what, Godzilla's at, like, 26 films, I think, or something like that, and Bond's at 25 or something. So, I mean, they're both, like, those are the only two franchises I can really think of that have run for that length. There's not even really an American franchise that's run for that length. Like, you specifically said like UK, but like there's not even one in America that I can think of that's even really run that long.
I mean, we have a lot of our 80s horror franchises that kind of stretch into modern times, but they trickle.
Almost the only, and it's still like not even really, really close, but kind of when we did Planet of the Apes, I mean, that's up to 9 films total, 5 in the original series, the remake, plus 3 new films, and that started in
68.
Yeah, 68. I knew it was like, I was thinking, I was like 67 or 68, so it's like.
And it spans all the way 2017, so it's a pretty good.
That's a pretty lengthy franchise. Like it's hard to keep those going, and especially Bond, but I will compare Bond again to like Godzilla in a way of they've had to constantly keep updating it every so often. They don't just keep redoing, like it never stayed in that original version. You know, they got the 80s and they did their new thing, and then they got to the new millennium and changed it again, and now we're up to Shin Godzilla where they've kind of changed it again. They keep updating it, which is the whole point of Bond. It's like it's not made for one actor to carry it forever. It eventually that actor gets, you know, to a certain point, some faster than others.
But one actor can't do it forever. They get old.
It's true. Hey,
there's what, two Indiana Jones is.
We're getting Indiana Jones 5, so maybe one actor can play the same role forever until he dies, and then that'll be it. They'll be like, oh, Indiana Jones is done. Harrison Ford's dead.
No, they have deep fake. They'll get an actor and somebody that sounds like him.
They'll hire Adam Driver to deep fake for Harrison Ford.
I don't think he looks that much like Harrison Ford, but
hey, doesn't matter. Yeah, he's like way taller. Doesn't even matter. They'll still shoehorn it in, but yeah,
as far as the Ian Fleming books go, weren't there only 3 before Bond started?
Yeah, I know it was pretty early. Like he didn't. That's why he still had room to change. Because I guess I haven't read any of the books. I own a few of them, but I've just never really gotten into them, like reading them. But I know that was something that in one of the behind the scenes when they mentioned that, yeah, it was like still so early on that he had never officially like said in any of the books, you know, it was just that he was a British Secret Service agent, but they never specifically mentioned like his heritage. And that was after he saw Sean Connery that he said, oh yeah, he should be Scottish because I like Sean Connery and I think he's really good. So I'll just make him Scottish just because of Sean Connery.
There's this old Casino Royale that has nothing to do with these Eon films.
Oh, yeah, the original.
Woody Allen directed it. It's like just a really goofy thing.
Yeah.
Like the character in general is kind of based off the book, but it's more of a Austin Powers, I guess. Although Austin Powers wouldn't exist without Bond. It's the only true parody, I guess, we have to Bond.
Yeah. Yeah. That's one of the only that. And, what's that other one that they made that I always forget the title of it. That one that Sean Connery did. That's not an official.
Never Say Never Again.
Never Say Never. That was it. Yeah. That's a very obvious title because he said he'd never play Bond again, but they paid him all that money. All because that one screenwriter was like, I think I should have the rights to James Bond. And they were like, you can have the rights to this one story. And he's like, I'll film it. And that was all he did.
Yeah. There's only a few that aren't official, which is Casino Royale from the 60s, I think. And Never Say Never.
Never Say Never, which was Sean Connery and I think Kim Basinger's in that movie. I've never seen that one because I think they technically own the rights. I think the rights eventually like reverted back to the Barbara Broccoli and like her family and that Eon Productions, and they like I think they make a point to not re-release that film because they don't consider it official. So like they don't put it out. Like obviously I wouldn't expect it to be in like the Bond sets that we own that have all the films in them, but even then they still seem to like not really care to put those movies out because they want to only preserve like the official legacy of James Bond.
I mean, it pretty much almost none of them tie together at all.
Not really. Well, not until we get to this one. That was where they finally made some changes.
I will say the tone kind of sticks for the most part, except probably Sean Connery, because he goes from a pretty grounded story to more ridiculous as they go along. And everyone else is kind of has the same tone throughout the whole movie.
Yeah.
Like Roger Moore's are very specific. Brosnan's kind of all feel the same too, and
they definitely have. That's why I think Daniel Craig's are like they do all kind of have the same general feel to them. I mean, it's a Bond movie, like they do try to stay consistent even when they're rebooting it with this movie or changing things. They want to keep a general, I don't know, like, yeah, aesthetic that is James Bond, that's very easily identifiable with these films. But I do like that they seem to, for the most part, kind of tailor the stories and the way they go to the actor. Like, they don't feel like, I can't see certain actors appearing in, like, their other films. Like, Sean Connery's is very much like, he's the original, like, ladies man.
Roger but also, Moore like, couldn't do it.
Yeah. I don't know if Roger Moore's not the same way. Like, Roger Moore is definitely more of like comedy. He leans into that. You get into his films and they're a lot more jokey. George Lazenby's like the only one that I don't know. Like there's not enough. He only did the one film. So it doesn't feel like there's enough that we got to fully explore like what his James Bond overall would have been. But I like Honor Majesty's Secret Service. I think
that's
a good movie.
One of my favorite ones.
I think
honestly.
He's good in it. Like I don't think he's bad. I'm surprised.
It has a backstory to it. It starts off with a backstory with Bond being married and having his wife killed.
That is one of my favorite openings of anyone too. Like they do the jokey one when it starts off and he's getting beat up on the beach and George Lazenby just looks right into the camera and goes, "This never happened to the other guy." And then yeah. It just goes from there. Like that's still one of my favorite openings to any Bond film. Like one of the few times where they just straight up like broke the fourth wall and just like made a very specific reference to these being films.
We'll cover probably all the Bonds
at some point.
Exactly. I grew up with Brosnan. The very first one I ever saw was GoldenEye, which is funny because that's Judi Dench's first one too. And yeah. She's pretty much continued to be in the franchise.
And it's Martin Campbell.
Completely up to. Yeah, Martin Campbell, too, it kind of impresses me. I'm curious, because his first one was GoldenEye, and he kicked off the Brosnan era, and then he came back for Casino Royale to do the Bond era, and I think they're both really good, GoldenEye and Casino Royale. Yeah. I'd be interested to see if they would go back to him for... Another.
I could see them asking, but I think he has done interviews where he said like he's not really interested in it anymore. Like he enjoyed making those two films, but I think he like, which I will say, I think he doesn't want to be associated as just the Bond guy. But I mean, I was looking up his filmography to double check like what else he's done, and it's like the
he
Green
did the
Lantern,
Zorro movie,
and
right?
He did both Zorro movies. I didn't know he did both of them. I knew he did the first one, but he did both of them. It's like yeah, I'm like.
The
hey,
mask
being,
of Zorro.
Being known as the James Bond guy isn't such a bad thing. Like, you did two of them that were really good and kicked off, like, those two eras of James Bond.
I mean, we'll get into it, obviously, with Sam Mendes. He's the only one to kind of, like, do two in a row, I believe.
No, other people have done two in a row.
In a row?
I thought so. I could be mistaken, but I...
three of them.
But I think, I'm pretty sure he's done two, or somebody else has done...
At the end of the day, it doesn't really matter.
It kind of does. I need to disprove you or disprove myself one way or the other.
You can disprove me by improving the podcast, I think.
Oh, it'll never happen. Yeah, the first ones, Dr. No and From Russia with Love, were both Terrence Young, who came back for Thunderball. And Guy Hamilton did three in a row. I've disproved you on two counts now. And John Glenn did five in a row. So I've disproven you on multiple levels. You should probably just delete that from the podcast entirely when you edit it.
Oh, I'll keep it in. I'm fine with being wrong.
Okay.
I absolutely am 100% fine with being wrong. But yeah, with Daniel Craig, when they first showed him, that they did his very first teaser that they did for him, I wasn't feeling it. It was just kind of that like classic imagery, and I was used to Brosnan that had the Bond look, at least as far as I grew up with. And then when they released that very first teaser trailer, like with the actual plot, which is essentially the beginning, the opening scene of Casino Royale, it totally sold me 100%. It was all in black and white, and it just had that like subtle, like you have to kill two, and it's like, oh, I know. And I was like, holy shit, this is a way different James Bond. And that's what we're going to kind of explore as these movies go on, is that all five of them, at least they are the only ones that like truly are sequels to each other and have an overarching story.
Yeah.
And I don't think that they're always good, but I like my odds with the new one. I kind of have high hopes for it. I think it's got a solid director. Craig came back because he felt that it was a good way to end it. And more have come back too. But we'll get into that one if we get there, I guess. If we make it that far. But yeah, this is just like something very... I mean, what do I know Daniel Craig from before this? Munich? Little small roles that he popped up in?
Yeah. He did what was that? He did that movie with Matthew Vaughn, Layer Cake. I think he did that before this. But yeah, nothing like huge, at least not in America. Like he did more British stuff mostly, I think is what he did. Yeah, I'd say Munich's like the only thing I could really think of having seen him in a large role in America before that.
He's very good too playing. He's believable as charismatic, and he's believable as kind of the unhinged rookie that he plays in his very first movie. I think that he plays the seriousness and the humor really well. And I think what really helps this movie along too is that a lot of people that grew up with Bond, some people were turned off by the fact that he seemed to be not following what James Bond was, because the geniuses at Eon decided, hey, what if we add a character arc to James Bond and we change him over the course of these movies? And he has some pretty big emotional changes, at least these first three movies, I would say, even though the second one is kind of just the last like couple minutes of the movie. But
yeah,
for the most part, he goes on this emotional journey on top of the action. And Casino Royale, I don't know. I think my favorite thing about it is just the plot in general. This is my introduction to Mads Mikkelsen. First time I saw him in anything, and he still kicks ass in every single thing that he's in. But the plot of this movie, where the British Secret Service and like their idea of taking out this terrorist cell was by bankrupting it in a game of Texas Hold'em. And that just fascinates me, where they're like, how can we take them out? Well, they can't operate if they don't have money.
Yeah, I like that idea, that because that's kind of where you started to get, it was like off and on with most of the Bond films. I mean, a good bit of them before this were some sort of ridiculous scheme that just was dumb. Like you'd look at it and go, how is that supposed to work? Like the villains would be someone ridiculous, like Goldfinger or something like that, that's just way over the top. Or like the Pierce Brosnan ones, like those villains like really started to get like the evil like corporate genius type thing. Like they all look like they were all like felt like a version of a Steve Jobs if he was evil, especially Jonathan Pryce when he was the villain. Like he 100% like Steve Jobs and Bill Gates if they were secretly trying to destroy the world. If they were actually, you know, putting chips in the vaccines and spying on you, that was that character. So I do like that this movie has a main villain that's, he doesn't even really have, Mads Mikkelsen's character doesn't even really have like an overarching plan. And he's not the guy that actually like does the bad stuff. He's not even the actual terrorist. He's just the guy that has all of their money and like funds them. So it's like he's only by proxy the villain. Like really the guys that go to chop his arm off and or kill his girlfriend in the hotel are like way worse than he is. He's just like a money man. He's really not that important. But to cast him as, to make that your villain,
I mean, he funds still, terrorism, so
he doesn't fund it, he just holds their money for them. Actually, he's only trying to make himself more rich because he's betting on stocks with their money. He's not really funding it. He's just trying to steal. He's just really stealing their money and then trying to use it to make himself richer. And then he lets them keep it. Like he gives it back to
smarter. He's a smarter Uncut Gems character.
Yeah.
For the most part, there's a couple tiers of villains going on in these movies. And at least this one, we know there's Mr. White, which you don't really see much of him in this movie. He's pretty much beginning, middle, and end. He's not really seen much more. I mean, he's in a bunch of significant scenes, but he's the man in back. And Mads Mikkelsen's like the main bad guy in this, but you obviously can tell that he's not the man of power. And then we have the, what were they called? The people in Africa.
Yeah, I can't remember what like their army was called or whatever. They're like revolutionaries somewhere right. In Africa.
And they were being funded by terrorism. So yeah. So I kind of like how they come back. I like how everybody kind of comes back and circles around each other a few times in this movie, where you have that great opening. Well, beyond the opening scene where Bond gets his 00 status by killing, you know, two people. You have that scene in Madagascar where he ends up chasing the guy. And that's a good example of the Bond that we're getting into. There's a lot of things to it that besides, like, there's all this action to it, but the movie does calm down. Like, the movie has its lulls and gets back up to the excitement. It is legitimately roller coaster ride by definition, this entire movie.
Yeah.
But in Madagascar, they're all tied together because that's where Lashif's making the deal with these revolutionaries and taking their money for safekeeping, like you said.
He doesn't fund it. He just holds their money for them.
And we get this scene where you kind of get the humor, too, with the guy that's like, where Bond's telling him not to touch his ear. So he knows that he has the microphone in it. And then this chase begins. And the choreography to it, I think, is a really good example of who this new Bond is, too. Because not only does he, like, seem to be a pain in the ass to M and kind of do his own thing, which he's always getting in trouble for, but his style, too, of, like, trying to to take this guy down is that it's not necessarily, like, brute force, but he uses his brain. And this guy, what I really like about the style of it, too, is the guy that he's chasing kind of has this, like, parkour style, and Bond doesn't have that style. He's just as average of a man as he could be besides being in, like, physical condition, like, peak physical condition. But there's some, like, great moments, too, in the set pieces where he gets to the construction site and the guy thinks, I outran him. And then Bond's in that giant bulldozer. It kind of reminds me of Terminator 2 or something where, like, they're just chasing him down in the truck.
Yeah.
But just a style like that, you know, he does a little Jackie Chan thing and he gets through the little hole in the wall, but Bond just breaks right through the drywall, like that type of stuff. He flies through he jumps creatively through this, like, little trailer, and Bond just runs around it, you know?
Yeah. He chases him down with the bulldozer.
Yeah.
Like, just starts trying to run him over with it.
Yeah, that's a great moment. And he knocks all his pipes down. It's like, almost killing him. But I do like how resilient that guy is that he's chasing, too, that's, like, climbing up the side of the building and Bond can't do that, so Bond has to use his brain a little bit. He's not obviously just brawn, but how he has to get up to the top and he you know, he drops the weights to bring himself up the pulley system and stuff like that. And then he's not like he's flawed, and they show that early on, too, with the choreography, with how the one guy's, like, escaping by, like, jumping, like, story by story to get down. In our Daniel Craig, he's barely missing it and almost dying and, like, painfully, like, injuring himself as he's chasing this guy. But he is swift, too, because, like, when he goes into the embassy and he basically, you know, he murders that guy, he destroys the embassy, and he sneaks away, essentially. And we get more M, like... I like their chemistry together, too. It pays off more in Skyfall, I think.
Yeah.
But Judi Dench has so much more character in this than she does in the Brosnan ones. I mean, she's got significant parts in those movies, but the dynamic between her and Daniel Craig, I think, is one of my favorite aspects of it. So I think it is going to hurt somewhat without her being in it, unless she's in it in a flashback or something, in No Time to Die.
Yeah.
I'll speculate my way all the way up to
it. Yeah, you can keep speculating. Yeah, this was... I like how they kind of keep some things, but then they discard other things. Like, I think that was probably their best decision was to essentially reboot just about everything about James Bond other than Judi Dench. Like, that was basically the only thing they carried over from Pierce Brosnan, which I think was a good idea to at least give you, like, have some sort of connectivity back to the previous franchise to not just completely blow it up. They at least leave one thing. We obviously lose Q. There's no Q in this version yet, because I know that was largely most people's biggest complaint by the time you got to the last Pierce Brosnan one was like, am I watching a fucking cartoon? Like, he is just like it started getting ridiculous with like the gadgets that was like, it was like, does he do anything or does he, like, does he do anything or is it all just the gadgets? Like, could you literally just put anyone in this situation and give him an exploding pen and an invisible car and a jetpack and like, they could just do whatever they want? Like, they started to get a little ridiculous. So I like that they just completely don't even have a Q in this first film. They're just like, we're not even going to get to gadgets yet. We're going to slowly work our way to that. And even when they get to them by the third and fourth Daniel Craig one, they're still not as ridiculous and over the top as they were at the end.
It follows the same kind of beginning of Connery. It has the same trajectory where it starts pretty realistic, minus like a weird quirk with a villain or something. And then it shifts into the insane. I feel like Goldfinger is easily the like most well balanced, and then you get into Thunderball that's like fucking insane.
Oh, Thunderball's great. I love Thunderball. But then you get to like Diamonds Are Forever, like Moonraker.
Oh well, that those
are when you start.
Those
are
when
you start.
Really
you start to get a little ridiculous.
I think my favorite is From Russia With Love. That's my favorite one, because I feel like it still has that, like, classy feel to it.
Yeah.
Mostly lives in the world of realism. And it's not that I hate when things get crazy, because they definitely start to get a little wild in Skyfall. I just think that the balance is really well done in that movie.
Yeah. This does it. These films do a lot better job of, because again, like you were saying, how they kind of got more ridiculous, and then especially once you started getting into the Roger Moore. That's what I was trying. So I was trying to get. Once you get into the Roger Moore ones, where his first two are easily like two of the worst Bonds ever, Live and Let Die, and
it's a good song though.
It's a great song. I mean, I will say that's something we may want to bring up at some point. Like, we, you know, what are some of your favorites? I do love the song for this film too, because I enjoy Chris Cornell. I think he's good, and I like this one, and it's like a good it's a good theme song for a reboot, like calling the song You Know My Name, you know, basically, you know who I am, we've done this before, but this is just new version of it. But to say about, you know, kind of course correcting, That's where I feel like they kind of went way too hard with Timothy Dalton at the end of the Roger Moore ones. They were like, oh, he's going to be super gritty and he's going to be taking down like drug lords in Mexico. And I was like, no, you like went like way too far in the opposite direction of like you tried to be like, no, Roger Moore was a clown. We're going hardcore. We're feeding people sharks and stuff. Like, I mean, he was, he got better though. It's his are one of the ones that I feel like, with most,
it's like
Looney
Tunes when you're watching his. They're wild.
With most, though, it's like the first ones are good and then they get worse. His, I think the worst ones were his first ones, and he actually got better as he went through, at least. Like, they were still pretty ridiculous, but they at least, like, they found a better balance. They got rid of, I still will bring it up anytime we talk about James Bond, I hate the first two Roger Moore ones, because of that terrible, like, Cletus sheriff that pops up in both films. He pops up in the first one, and you're like, oh my god, this guy. And then you get to the second movie, and when they're randomly in, like, Japan or Thailand or something like that, and he's on a boat tour, and you just hear that voice that's like, ooh, howdy, I'm in this Japan. And I'm just like, oh my god, he showed up again. Like, that killed that movie for me. And I love, like, Man with a Golden Gun isn't a good movie for the most part, although Christopher Lee, I love Christopher Lee, and he's a great villain as the Man with the Golden Gun. He's perfect in that movie, but everything surrounding him is terrible.
Yeah, Moore's are probably the hardest for me to stomach because I felt like it goes too much in the trying to make you laugh or be goofy for goofy's sake.
Yeah. His are like more hit and miss for me. Like The Spy Who Loved Me is good. Like Octopussy's pretty good. But then you get some of the ridiculous ones. A View to a Kill gets kind of ridiculous with Christopher Walken and Grace Jones in that one. They start to get a little over the top. More over the top than usual.
I mean, you think about it. They all besides Lazenby that has one, and Dalton's that kind of his two that just kind of really don't even go in that fun era.
No.
Connery's got goofy ones. Moore's are all goofy. Brosnan gets goofy.
He gets goofy, yeah. At least I could say Daniel Craig hasn't gotten goofy. But hey, no time to die. We don't know. He might get goofy in that one.
Oh, he somehow manages to say kind of classic, kind of classy when things get goofy. Because they kind of pump that up in Skyfall and a little bit more heavier in Spectre. And I feel like, not that they're pulling back, but No Time to Die feels like it's going to be more in that like Skyfall, like there's gonna be gadgets but nothing out there as such as late Brosnan period, you know.
Hey, we don't know yet. We'll see when we get there.
Yeah,
but I do like all the they throw in a few like classic touches everywhere in this film, especially. I mean, I like the cars, although this is like one of the most everyone mocks this movie for its product placement for the like 30-second drive where very prominently we see James Bond driving like a Ford Fusion, and everyone's like, absolutely not. I don't care if that car was like given to him for free. There's no way James Bond's driving a Ford Fusion around, which then he pretty much gets rid of it almost immediately. That's how you know it's like the worst product placement ever, is as soon as he gets to the hotel, he like throws the keys to the valet and you never see that car ever again. The rest of the time he's driving like Aston Martins and everything like that. He gets the classic DB5 that he wins in a card game, so we get a little bit of, you know, foreshadowing.
Which is even funnier because that Dimitri guy who, when he throws his keys on the table, the keychain is also the Aston
Martin.
Is
the car, yeah. Yeah,
he doesn't even just get the car. He gets the guy's wife. Like he
gets everything.
He literally gets everything.
And that's one of the first. That's one of those moments we get when the guy's wife is murdered, and you know, that's like the first time James Bond tries to be like, oh no, it doesn't bother me. Like oh well, she's dead. Like, you know, I feel like you do have like a little bit of a sense that like he probably does feel responsible that he kind of just like left her there knowing that they'd probably think she was involved with it, with like making the deal not go down and preventing the terror attack that they were trying to do to blow up the plane.
He seems to not have considered what the repercussions might have been.
Yeah.
And I feel like it definitely hits him a lot harder than expected. But then when he ends up, you know, later in the movie, he has Eva Green's character, Vesper, and he uses her in the exact same way that Demetrius was using his wife, like as the distraction in the card game and stuff like that. So obviously that woman has some sort of effect on him that's like carrying over into Vesper in some aspect. Some psychological thing is making him, I don't know, take her more seriously than he did the last one.
Yeah.
You know, he does not, he's like full-on ladies' man. But I think the arc that this movie has is really nice, where he doesn't seem to care about women at all. He starts off just, actually, he's kind of selfish in general. It has nothing really to do with just sex and gratification and stuff like that. But he ends up kind of coming back to, like, falling in love and then being betrayed. And he has that kind of, like, closed off feelings, I guess, more or less, for the rest of the series. It hardens him and it matures him, and I think that's probably the best part of this entire movie, is that he is fun to watch as like the rogue, you know, the very first time that Bond is on a mission. That's fun to watch too, and I'm okay with him kind of being more violent or whatever, because he grows into that Bond that we enjoy.
Yeah.
Definitely by Skyfall, he's becoming like the Connery version that we like so much. Well, I don't know if everybody likes the Connery version so much, but I'd imagine that most people that are fans of James Bond do.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I think that Craig ends up being easily my second favorite Bond. I mean, I probably end up, I don't know, I don't really hate Spectre or hate Quantum of Solace, but they're not my favorites. They're not as good as, they're not the standard that Casino Royale and Skyfall end up being. And there's a few Connery runs where I'm like, these are getting a little bit rough.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I would agree. I'd say he is probably my second favorite.
Dalton's your first.
Yeah. Dalton's always number one. I don't even hate those movies either. Like, I would say the only ones I truly hate are the first two Roger Moore ones, Live and Let Die and Man with the Golden Gun, and those the last two Pierce Brosnan ones are like extremely rough just because of how ridiculous they started to get. And like, but I don't know Timothy Dalton. I know he's like people that are fans of the franchise will like always make fun of those ones because they don't feel like James Bond movies at all. They felt like they were just making generic 80s action movies and just calling them James Bond. But I still think he has like good moments to him, and at least he's trying to be like the James Bond that he wants to see, but they're just like not letting him be James Bond. Basically, they're trying to do again like kind of a generic 80s, you know, it's like I said, those movies turn into like just all being about like cocaine dealers in Mexico and Colombia, and like it just gets kind of like very boring and bland.
I think that's the worst part of the Dalton ones are they're so forgettable. Yeah. They really are. I think one of them I like and the one of them I don't.
I think the first one is the better one. That's the one where the girl's like trying to assassinate someone and he like stops her from doing it and then he has to like rescue her or something like that.
I wish you were pitching the movie.
Yeah. my favorite thing about the pitch of that movie was that License to Kill, the original title, was supposed to be License Revoked, because that's the whole thing, is that he gets they take away his license to kill from the Secret Service, British Secret Service, that the director was told that American audiences don't know what the word revoke means, and he's just like, I didn't believe that.
That's true.
No, he said that's what the producers told him, but he's like, I don't think that's like, I don't know where they got that. That always makes you think of,
they don't seem so sophisticated, but I think they understand revoked.
That always reminds me of Sergio Leone with, Duck, You Sucker. And he was 100% convinced that that was a saying in America. And he's like, they're totally going to get it. And people were like, even the American actors in the movie, like James Coburn, are like, that's not a saying in America. And he's like, I'm naming the movie Duck, You Sucker. And they're like, okay, well, you're going to do that, I guess. And like,
you do whatever you want.
Yeah, they're like, you do what you want, but that's not a thing. You can keep saying it's a thing. And he was like, he was so sure that, like, it really is. Like, did someone con him one day and be like he met a guy one time that was like, hey, man, Duck, You Sucker. And he's like, that guy's from America. They must say that all the time.
Yeah, and I mean, this one's really great, too, because I feel like, it, for the most part, it has, like, some kind of, like, over-the-top sci-fi spy espionage stuff, such as when they call M and they say, yeah, he's logging in your computer, and she wakes up and she flips up her nightstand and there's like a secret monitor under there. Yeah. That, and when they put the tracking device like in him, well, the thing that like monitors his vitals and all that kind of stuff too, that's about as like, I guess they have the gun hidden in the car and everything too. Yeah. But they're more subtle for the most part.
I enjoy, you know, that kind of how you were saying earlier about him not just completely being like brute force, like he is actually smart. Like when they play those moments of when he sneaks into M's house and she's like, hold on a second, how do you know where I live? And he's like, the same way I know your name. And like, he starts to get ready to say, he's like, I always thought M was just an issued initial. I didn't think it actually stood for something. Like, those are good moments when it's like, he has. And then when he's logging in and she's like, how does he have my password? And they're like, well, like, I have no clue. Like where it he's is getting funny. All this stuff
it's
from.
Really good comic relief. I do like, when it's really good point A to point B to point C to point D. Like, as he's, you know, he wrecks that guy's car and then he gets into the security and he sees the Aston Martin that he needs. And then he needs to find out where that guy's at. And he's like, he's on the beach. So it gets to the beach. And then they have that scene where they're like homaging Dr. No, where Ursula Andress comes like out of the water, but it's him
this
that does it.
We get Daniel Craig coming out of the water. Yeah,
and
that's
funny too, because she's like riding the horse and she's like, damn, you know, like she has that reaction to
that
him.
What a turn of events. Because we had that, original shot, and then they redid that with Halle Berry. She recreates that shot in the Pierce Brosnan era, and then it's like you get to that and you're like, who's gonna come out this time? And Daniel Craig, and you're like, not what I was expecting.
Right. And if you think about it, Halle Berry's like suit was heavy reminiscent of Ursula's suit from the first one. It was like orange or something, but it was the exact same design. But I like, for the most part, like it takes everything very subtly, like the espionage side of it, where he's got to follow that Demetrius guy and he ends up dropping the bag off and making the switch, and he ends up killing the guy. He ends up killing him, which is, I really love that scene too, where they're just slowly, you know, fighting over the knife and nobody notices at all. Like it's just like this quiet little fight between the two of them, and he wins, he kills the guy. And when he realizes that the bag's gone, because that's all it was this simple switch of the bag, and he ends up having to follow that guy. Like, it's really kind of simple, you know? The guy realizes that he's being followed, but he ends up switching into, like, a airport security outfit. So, nothing about it is absolutely wild. Like, there's no eyeball scanning or anything crazy like that. He's just setting off a sprinkler system and trying to distract people so he can blow up this massive plane and fund terrorism, you know, which I really do like the airport scene too. Like that stuff's like so much fun, I think, for like all Craig's like chasing him and trying to be one step ahead. He's not really ever exactly one step ahead. I mean, I guess he does save the day and he's one step ahead in the fact that he attached that bomb to that guy's back to his belt loop, which is really good too, because when they're fighting in the car or in the fuel truck and Bond grabs the back of his pants, which is like a really weird shot. You never see him attach anything. But the second time that you watch the movie, it's like there's so much purpose to it where they're like, we have to put in this weird shot of him grabbing inside that guy's pants before he lets him out of the truck. And I kind of do like that Bond saves the day and gets arrested, and they end up, you know, that guy has that, like, his last laugh and blows himself up, which is played very seriously. And you have that, that kind of goes back into the cartoon aspect that I was talking about before, where it's like, it's almost Wile E. Coyote and Roadrunner-esque, where he sets off the bomb and it's like, dude, I attached the bomb to you. Blows him up. And then Craig has that, like, creepy smile when he blew him up. Like, he's so satisfied that he destroyed that guy. And then his smile's basically wiped away when he finds out that because of all this, Solange or whatever was killed. But, yeah. And then we get into the general idea of poker. And I kind of like that they end up playing this game because it still remains very intense, I would say. Actually, the scenes kind of get to play around a little bit where sometimes they're actually kind of funny. Like after that very first round that they play of Texas Hold'em, and then he orders the drink that's all fancy, and everybody like was like, I'll have that. I have that too. And that's where we meet Jeffrey Wright, who's essentially the CIA's version of Bond, who's in this game to defund terrorism. I just like the way that, like, we're going to defund terrorism this way. And we're going to take this guy in and get some more information about him. Because when he's bankrupt, he'll be able, he won't have anywhere else to go. All the information's the only thing that he's going to have in his back corner.
Yeah. I like how they've always, because we had Felix Leiter in some of the other Bond films as the, as his American counterpart. And they do always play it kind of jokey as, you know, he's labeled as Bond's counterpart, but he's like, always like, he's never as charismatic. He's never as good with a gun. He's never as strong in a fight. Like, he's like, it's almost, it is almost feels like that, the British always want to be like, oh, sure, there's like an American version. That's why I said there's always like an American version of James Bond, but they're always like, but is he really as good? It's Jeffrey Wright. He's not Daniel Craig.
He's got the charisma. I do like when he stops him and he has the knife and he's like, how he introduces himself as a CIA and he makes the deal. You know, you let us take him and we'll fund it. But what do you do with the money? He's like, we don't care.
Yeah, he says, does it look like we need money? Which is, yeah, I do love, yeah, the British are all worried about, like, are you going to wire us that money soon? The Americans are just like, we waste money on everything. We don't care. That's a good scene. I do, I like that transition of when Bond goes bankrupt in the game. And they do, like, they'll do, like, a $5 million you can get back in the game, but, Vesper like doesn't trust that he's not gonna screw it up again, so his whole plan is like, I'm just gonna take a knife and I'm just gonna go kill Mads Mikkelsen like in the middle of the street, like like that's his whole plan.
I think that's really funny too, is they take breaks in the middle of this big Texas Hold'em tournament, if you want to call it that, and every break that he takes, something like absolutely insane happens.
Yeah,
to the fact where he's like, he's getting attacked with a machete. Too, he's literally got poisoned. Like, everything is like over the top.
Yeah, and then they just come down and they're all like real calm at the table.
It's always really funny when he comes back and they're like, "Oh, I see you changed your shirt. Were you nervous?" And he's like, "Whatever."
Yeah.
Or like when he comes back and he should be poisoned and dead, but that lady's like, I think all of it. It's this like really great reaction, and you know what? Spoiler alert, because we're going there, we're talking about the movie in full detail. James Bond bankrupts terrorism. Somewhat. He loses them a huge chunk of money.
Yeah, although technically they get it back later anyway.
Double spoiler alert.
Yeah, we're,
it's like
really,
you're double agent or something there.
We're really diving in there.
Yeah, I think too, I don't know if it's because they give Eva Green's character more personality. She's one of my favorite Bond women because she ends up being more of a character. And it's not just how she affects him over the course of like these two the first two movies, I guess forever too. She kind of lingers.
Yeah.
But the rest are like, hey, look how beautiful this woman is, and that's pretty much that. They're just there to look at. And they kind of play that aspect up a little bit where his plan is, you know, you put on this dress and you're going to distract them a little bit. So they're not thinking about the game, but then it kind of goes into like, he legitimately falls in love with this person. And I think that that's like the closest that you kind of get to, Honor Majesty's Secret Service, where it has that same sort of, I'm in love and now I want revenge kind of vibe that the Craig era ends up going down. But yeah, I was so excited when I watched this movie. I knew that it felt special to me. Just, I don't know if it just happens to be that Martin Campbell was like mastered it at this point, but I feel that they do almost every single thing right. Like when you're talking about the changes that they make to the character, he's not 100% changed. He's just not there yet. So I like him when he asks if he wants his martini, like, shaken or stirred. And he's like, I don't give a damn.
Yeah. Yeah, he's not, he doesn't need to settle on those type of things.
It's not important to who he is.
No.
But yeah, just like, I mean, you kind of get the little bit of that Casino Royale feel from Dr. No, where he's playing poker in the first movie. But it's only really a scene, and that's that. I like that this is like a huge chunk of the movie.
He's not even playing poker. He's playing that other super weird game that, like, I think I've seen him, like, describe. It's like, I don't even know what that is. I feel like I've seen them play it in Bob Le Flambeau or something like that. Like, it's that weird thing where they have that big, the guy has, like, the big spatula that he, like, collects the cards with. I don't even know what the name of that game is, but it's not even poker. That's definitely where it feels like somebody's like, hey, could we have Bond play a card game? And they're like, are you going to do that super old card game that no one even knows what it is? And they're like, no, we'll do Texas Hold'em because everyone knows Texas Hold'em now.
Yeah, I mean, it was at the time because Texas Hold'em was also literally on television as if it was a
sport. It was like that new hot thing, which I don't know. That's one of the funnier things. Like
Baccarat.
Baccarat. They do a good job of making this interesting. That's one of those things that I've watched those people play poker, and it's like, it's the goofiest thing in the world. Like they'll show like the one guy that's got like the biggest, darkest sunglasses in the world on, who have like the Beats headphones like you're wearing, like over his ears, and he'll just be like sitting with like his head down at the table, and they'll be like interesting strategy. I'm like, of what? Not like interacting with anybody and just like staring at the floor for the entire time. Like, this at least feels like they paint it in a way that makes it look more interesting, where everyone's like actually like staring each other down and like really trying to read each other.
Right. Hiding your tell. That's what it's called. Like hiding your poker face, or having a poker face, I guess, is hiding your tell.
I do.
It's not showing what you're thinking, which is really one of my favorite things about the idea of this card game, or you get a lot of it even with chess movies and stuff.
Yeah.
We're just like, they'll stare at each other and trying to figure each other out mentally.
I like watching some of those type of like reaction things, and they'll have like people like break down that are like experts. So they had someone that was a professional poker player, and he was like, you know, they were showing him different scenes from films, and he was talking about it. And they got to the Casino Royale one, and the guy was like saying like, yeah, I mean, this is like kind of fairly realistic. Like, you know, this is how like a real, you know, high stakes poker tournament would be played. And then like the one thing he said was at the end, when everyone's like going all in at the very end, he's like, oh, just the whole table's just, everyone's going to go all in and just throw it up in the air. Like no one's even, there's like no strategy. Everyone's just like all in, like they're all doing it. And then when they keep flipping the cards over, he's like, oh, that guy's got a great hand. Oh, wait, that guy's got a better hand. Oh, that guy's got a great hand. He's like, okay, I mean, he's like, the statistics of
this happening.
That is literally
the final moment of the game is, yeah, there's four characters, and each one is definitely sure that they won until they get to the next guy.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's like they keep playing that, and it's like you know it's gonna get the Bond, and he's gonna have the best hand or something like that. But yeah, it's like that always made me laugh. Like the guy reacting to it, and he's like, oh, everyone's just going all in. Like he's like, usually when someone goes all in, it's only like, it's like one other person goes and you know they go like heads up against each other. He's like, it's usually not like the entire table. Everyone's just like, yep, I definitely have the winning hand. Like once three other people do it, you start to think, I don't know, three other people are confident they have the best hand. I don't think I should try.
Well, as far as the movie goes, it keeps it interesting, I would say. Bond has like three different times that he plays the game. The very first one, he loses on purpose to kind of look amateur. The second time, he really tries, but he still loses. And then the third is like, you think, oh, he's shitty. Why is he even here? You know, he's apparently the best card player that they had in MI6. I don't know.
Yeah, I think she does say that. I think M does like vaguely mention like you have the best poker skills or something, like, or she kind of like mentioned something about like everyone in your unit in the military like said you were great at cards or something like that. Like it is very vague as to why he is that they do let him go on this mission.
I imagine it'd be like another kind of spin-off, but like the Secret Service movies. What are those called? Kingsman.
Yeah.
Where they do a bunch of weird stuff. Like I would like to have a Bond's training and he has to learn how to play poker. Like it will come in play. You'll need to know this.
Would that make it more interesting? What, you know, when everyone brings up things about, man, the CIA's budget's like $3 billion. What do they spend that money on? And it's like, oh man, you don't know how many of these illegal high stakes poker tournaments they're just, that's the entire strategy, is just bankrupt all the terrorists and you know, but we put all these guys out there that keep losing.
The reason I like that plot so much is that it's the least foolproof plot of all time. Yeah. I mean, even Bond is like you said, it's kind of brushed off. Like, yeah, we guess you're the best that there is.
Yeah.
Not that they really tried, like had a trial run and he was the best out of everybody. Obviously we need to cut some time out of this movie because it's already over 2 hours long where you essentially have what, 4 set pieces and a fake ending, and then it kind of gets into the actual climax with the final set piece.
Yeah.
Which I really do like almost all the action is in this entire movie, from the Madagascar chase to when they're at the airport in Miami to the final scene too. I mean, I like the car too, where I love that moment where he's trying to save Vesper and they have her laying in the middle of the road and he has that crash, which is so brutal, but I like the way they film it too, where it's just this kind of like nice faraway shot where they don't make it overly more. I mean, it is kind of violent. It rolls like 8 times, I think, but yeah. I just like that. I like how they get him. They drag him out of there and then they have like, I don't know, torture porn, basically, where you don't get that in any other Bond movie. That's probably the weirdest scene, is when he's on that chair with no seat in it, and LaChafe's just taking that rope and, like, smacking him in the nuts with it, and Bond keeps trying to play it off like he's, like he's, you know, being cocky and trying to be like, yeah, you can't get to me. Which essentially Bond's right, because Bond essentially says, you're not going to get anything out of me, and they're going to kill you. And within a minute, Mr. White, who now you're seeing him for the second time, you saw him in the beginning in Africa, which he didn't really like say anything. He was just there. He comes in and it's weird. He comes in and he assassinates LaChafe, and LaChafe says, oh, I'm going to get your money for you. And he just shoots him in the head. And basically says, well, it's more than money. We can't trust you. Which is probably the heaviest exposition in this entire movie. And then he leaves Bond alive for some reason. I don't know why. I mean, I guess he wakes up in the hospital, but it seemed more so from getting his balls bashed in by LaChafe.
Yeah.
I mean, and then the next step's great, too, because it's like, this is where it gets a little bit twisty. Where it has kind of like the femme fatale feel to it at first.
That's right,
Where you think that he's being played. Well, he thinks he's being played, and we think that he's being played. And we essentially will find out that more or less she's being blackmailed, and it really has nothing to do with like being this double agent that she was portrayed to be. But I love the final scene, too, where he... You know, he kind of protects her a little bit when M's asking about depositing the money. And he's like, oh, the money wasn't deposited, huh? And he finds out where she's at and he follows her to this handoff with Mr. White's people. And that guy has a very, like, he reminds me of the villain from Raiders of the Lost Ark or something. That guy with the eye patch.
The guy with the eye patch on, the glasses, yeah. He 100% looks like the Nazi from Raiders of the Lost Ark. I don't know if that was, I'm not 100% sure if that was on purpose, but it 100% is exactly what it seems like.
And my favorite thing about this too is they're in Venice. I like the boat scene too, where Vesper's making eye contact with that guy who just like happens to like full on stare at her. I guess like he's been keeping eyes on her, but I just find it an eye on her. Yeah, keeping an eye on her. The thing I didn't realize, though, until this movie was that these buildings... I didn't know this at all. I didn't know these buildings were being kept afloat with, like, these huge air pouches of air, essentially. They're literally on floaties. It's a real thing. And when I saw the movie and he started, I didn't understand what they were at first. And then he started shooting. And it kind of gets comical to me a little bit too, because Bond doesn't know how to really get in the building to get to Vesper and get all these people. But he has, you know, a clear point of view of these huge pouches of air. I don't know what to call them. So he shoots them, and like the building starts to sink because of these things that are getting shot up.
Yeah.
But then it's funny to me because like the bad guys, like it gets to the point where, you know, he takes out a bad guy and the bad guy's machine gun goes off and takes out a few more of those pockets of air. And it keeps happening. Like as things escalate, I don't even think Bond shoots it maybe one more time, but I feel like the villains end up shooting it just as many times as he does.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
But and then it ends with maybe one of the most emotional. Maybe Skyfall kind of gets there too, but one of the more emotional endings with Vesper going down the elevator and like locking herself in there. And I think that it's a really good moment of Bond can't save everybody. He basically lacks total control over his situation. And that's the thing I think that bothers him the most is like when he has somebody like M that's telling him what to do and he needs to, you know, he kind of bucks authority a little bit because he feels that he can handle stuff by himself. The movie ultimately ends with, you can't handle things by yourself, which is probably, and we'll get into it next week, the biggest problem with Quantum of Solace is that the idea, I think, is interesting, but the emotional aspect isn't even really there until the end. And I think that's what makes Casino Royale and Skyfall so good. Yeah. And hopefully No Time to Die.
Hopefully. Yeah, well, I haven't watched Quantum of Solace in a long time. I don't maybe not since it first came out, or I might have rewatched it for Skyfall. I know I've seen Casino Royale because it pops up on TV every once in a while, and I'll see it on there. But yeah, it'll be interesting to get to that one and see what my thoughts are on it. It wasn't ever one of my favorites, but I you said earlier like you don't hate it, and I would say the same thing. Like, I didn't hate the movie, but I just remember not thinking it was as good as Casino Royale. Just being like, I don't know, that wasn't as good.
Well, we'll get into it more when we obviously talk about it. But like how I said that this movie has that like roller coaster ride of these subtle moments and then the action. For the most part, it's nonstop action in Quantum of Solace, and that's the worst part about it. Is that you can't even really enjoy any single moment. Like, what do you remember? I remember that shot where they fall through the roof, but it was more because it was from the trailer where the camera like followed them over the edge.
Yeah.
And I was so pumped for that movie and I was let down. And then I was so pumped for Skyfall and it lived up to expectations. And then I was so pumped for Spectre and it let me down too. But they're not really terrible movies. It's just my expectations of hoping that it's at least better than okay,
yeah,
and then basically falling into the okay category.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, we'll talk more about that as the characters that Bond becomes dependent on as the series goes along. I think this is actually probably a really interesting way to tackle Bond, is starting with the Craig ones. Could have went any other way, but I think his arc is at least the easiest to discuss.
Yeah. I mean, it's the only one that really does that. Yeah, I was about to say, it's the only one that really has an arc.
Unless you want to count Her Majesty's Secret Service, which kind of like fakes an arc. Yeah. Like it fakes a backstory that didn't exist before that.
Yeah.
And it's got skiing in it. That's awesome.
Yes. Sound like Roman Polanski. How can we get this script in front of him? Tell him it's got skiing in it.
Yeah, I am definitely sold. It is my favorite sport. No, that was me doing a poor Polanski. Skiing is not my favorite sport. But I've taken you skiing before, so yeah. We've done it.
Yeah, one time.
We've lived that life. When we get to the snow section, we'll reiterate your life of skiing.
Yeah, that one time.
Was it only once? It wasn't twice?
Yeah, it was only the one time. We tried to go in that other time, but there wasn't enough snow. Remember we showed up that one time and it was like we like got to the mountain and it was like, man, that's a lot of green. I don't think there's any skiing going on.
Yeah, and the guy was like, lol, we're closed.
Yeah.
And now we're like, it's more in the day of the internet now, or we could have probably found that out before we went. But yeah. then we had the technology of Casino Royale, which is actually really funny because anytime they're looking into their phones or something, I remember at the time being like, oh, that's cool. That's the future. And it just feels so dated. Like, that's the only thing that feels dated about this movie. Like, everything else just, it works so well to me. But when they're picking up the phone and he's got to do, like, the touchpad to get to read ellipsis, and he's like, the way that he's navigating through the phone, it really makes me laugh because it just seems way more difficult than it needs to be. And you know, at the time, that was cool. You were like, damn.
Yeah.
Because I don't even think we didn't even have the iPhone until the year after this movie. So the smartphone really didn't exist then.
Not at that time.
Anyways, this is our plan for the next 5 weeks. Hopefully we can do it for 5 weeks. I mean, it's less than a month. Not saying that they can't pull it. Maybe they'll surprise us. But I am really excited to finally be doing this. I will say, follow us on Facebook and Twitter at cinema_cinema_, so you can see the Bond ads I made like 2 years ago. I didn't change them. They're the exact same ones I made. They're them then. Yeah. And you can follow me on Twitter at JJMorgan19. That's where I'll say shit like, hey, I'm watching Casino Royale. And then, hey, check out the Casino Royale episode that I just recorded. And by the way, thanks for listening to that Casino Royale episode.
Thanks.